and welcome to a special midweek episode of the Between the Posts podcast. So for this episode, we kind of decided to be hipstery, and instead of covering the Champions League, we are going to take on one of the big knockout games for the Europa League, a Real Sociedad versus Manchester United game that didn't go the way we expected it to, frankly. As you can probably hear from the intro, this will actually be our first podcast without Eric. This time, your host, it's a me. It's going to be Jose Perez. And to discuss this game, we have a very special guest tonight. We have United Arena. Say hi.
Yeah, how's it going?
Well, if you're on Twitter, you might know him. So he's a Manchester United account who creates gorgeous data visualizations, I have to say, including from some data that, quite frankly, he painstakingly collects himself. And how has this, I don't know, like all of the kinds of observations that you have to do for these games, man, do you feel like, I imagine that now you feel that you can observe football pretty well?
Well, most certainly United. I think the thing with United is I watch each game three times. So I watch it for the first time just for fun, usually just commenting on Twitter. Second time will be to collect my own data. And the third time is for things that I've missed. Sometimes I can do that in just two. Other times I'll do it in just one. Sometimes I'll go to almost 10. So the game that we lost to Tottenham 6-1, I actually watched that game nine times. So yeah, so it just depends on the game. But I have a pretty good grasp on United. It's, you know, our players, what they do, their tendencies, you know, their biomechanics. And I've written, you know, my own notes and my own reports, which are just sitting on my desktop. And so, yeah, so I have a good grasp on United. It helps to, from then I can look at other teams and I can see certain things from them because, again, you know, the principles are very similar. And so, yeah, it definitely helps.
Even though your main focus is United, I mean, you still get to catch up a bit like with some of the other leagues. What do you usually like to watch if it's not United?
So this is probably from since I was a child, which is, you know, I liked Parma a lot, you know, in Italy because of the Cannavaro and Thuram and Buffon back in those days. And then I liked Dortmund because they had Amoroso and they had a few other players. I liked Atleti since I was a child, ever since, you know, the 90s. And I remember even the days of Aguero and Torres, you know, playing up front. And I really liked that. And then they left and it was like, oh no. And so those are the three teams I tend to watch most. But other than then, I tend to watch games because of the players that are involved. So, for example, I'll watch Barcelona games just because, you know, Leo. And I'll watch, you know, Juventus because Ronaldo is there. And who else? Bayern Munich, you know, because I like Lewandowski. And so, again, if it's not those three teams, then it tends to just be because of who's playing. And sometimes if those players, for some reason, aren't playing or they come off, I just don't watch it anymore. And so, yeah, I have a lot of time on my hands, put it that way.
Yeah, that being said, I do like to do that also from time to time, just watch certain teams because there are certain players that I love. And now, just to finish introducing you, so these days, now you have a Patreon and you're posting content there, aren't you?
Yeah, indeed. So I started my Patreon last month. It's going well so far. And so, you know, I'll do video analyses on their podcasts, match reviews, articles. I wrote I'm not sure how interesting this will be, but I wrote a 6,000 word neurology article just on how neurology impacts footballers and, you know, their cognitive processing, how they process things when they see them. And so, yeah, I do a bunch of different things on there, things that I can't really do on Twitter because of, you know, copyright laws and whatnot. And so, yeah, so it helps.
Yeah. So listeners, if you feel like that kind of thing is up your alley, I still have to read that article in particular, but I will, I promise. If listeners, if you feel like this is right up your alley, then you should subscribe to United Arena's Patreon. So now, one thing we did for that Patreon too was that we recorded a nice preview podcast on this game. And at this point I thought, well, we've covered this so extensively that we might as well review it too, which is what we're going to do now. So before diving into the lineups though, one thing we discussed a lot in the preview was how Real Sociedad were supposed to be one of the best defenses in La Liga, a team that conceded only 7 shots per game. So I guess the question we have to ask here is, what happened? What do you think happened?
I think It's always a tricky one facing United, because in the last, or when, you know, Ole came in 2018-2019 season, there was this idea that, you know, you know, we weren't really sure what United were going to do with Ole. You know, so some teams would attack them, some teams wouldn't, and some teams would attack down either side. And eventually this sort of narrative was created, and it's proven even with the numbers that we do struggle when teams tend to sit back against us, because we don't necessarily have that, and I don't really have a good word for it, but it's more so that intricate quality. You know, that player that can just slow things down and he sees spaces and gaps. You know, your David Silvas or your Ozils or your Leos, or, you know, that type of player who sees certain things. And we have Bruno Fernandes, but he's not that type of player. He's more of a high volume creator as opposed to one of high quality. Not that he doesn't have quality, of course. And so I think with Real Sociedad, what they did was they actually, I wouldn't say played into our hands, but they did certain things that we could have exploited, or that played to our strengths at least. And that was obviously them keeping the ball, playing high up the pitch. They pressed us from goal kicks, you know, and we ended up transitioning into a sort of a 6-4 formation with six defenders and four attackers. And I think that it just tactically and spatially, as long as we were able to bypass the two midfielders as in Merino and David Silva, we found it very easy to just proceed from there. And I think that, you know, the pressing that Real Sociedad did and the way that they tried to squeeze us up on the pitch, I think that really helped us. As long as we beat that line, I mean, we were through. And I think that's one of the things that we've done all season. And I don't know if the coach knew that. You know, I'm assuming they knew that we were good on transitions, but perhaps they didn't really expect us to be that proficient in them.
That's a pretty good summary, really, of what happens in the game, and gives us a really good preview of what we're going to dive into right now. So I will start by talking a bit about the Real Sociedad lineup. So they came into this game with a relatively bad streak in La Liga. They have only won 3 out of their last 13 games. That being said, they had been doing a bit better now that Alexander Isak was finding his form. David Silva was returning from injury. The lineup, very possession and pressing heavy, as you mentioned, a 4-3-3. In this case, the goalkeeper was Alex Ramiro, who was definitely Real Sociedad's best player in this game, which already says a lot considering by how much they lost. Yeah. A back four with Jose Basaldúa as the right back, Igor Zubeldia, as the right center back, Robin Lenormand as the left center back, Nacho Monreal as left back, although to be honest, the entire defensive line suffered today. Then a big absence here was that their defensive leader, Aritz Elustondo, was a last-minute absentee, so Lenormand had to cover him. That defensive leadership was definitely missing today. They fielded their strongest possible midfield trio, so this one with Asier Ilarramendi in the holding midfield role, Mikel Merino as kind of the all-action number 8 there, David Silva as the smooth, silky player playing in between the lines. Not a good day for any of them. And a forward trio with Mikel Oyarzabal on the left wing, Alexander Isak as the striker, Jan Usai on the right. So that was the case with Real Sociedad. You already explained also how, for example, you already went a bit into detail into how they like to press. But now, can you tell us a bit, United Arena, about what was Manchester United's lineup and shape for this game? What were the specific personnel adjustments that Ole made for this one?
So generally, we would play with David De Gea, but Dean Henderson came into the team. That's not surprising, but it was a bit of a shock. You know, sometimes something shocks you a bit and then you ponder over it and you go, it wasn't really surprising, actually. And so, you know, Dean Henderson has played over 1,000 minutes this season. He's been a secondary goalkeeper, but he's not been, you know, just a goalkeeper that's there in case he's needed. He actually has started quite a few games. And him starting is sort of, he was sort of the epitome for the fact that we were going to rotate, and that obviously, you know, drifted into our backline with Eric Bailly starting as well as Alex Telles. So Eric Bailly starting is because Victor Lindelof actually has a back injury, and his back injury he suffered with Sweden, I believe it was. This was in the first international break, so we're looking at October, if I'm not mistaken, and he actually injured it in the first half. And then he stayed on the pitch. He came out for the second half, and around 55, 60 minutes, I believe it was, or something around that, he came off. And from then, he had, you know, a back injury that was a niggling back injury. So it's going to keep continuing. And so it's something that we actually have to manage for the rest of the season. So he's not going to play in certain games. He won't play in certain cup games. And if we're playing a Premier League game where perhaps we're playing a lesser opponent, not necessarily a bad opponent, but just a lesser opponent that we think we can deal with, then Eric Bailly will be the player. It also helps Eric Bailly as well, because he is not the most reliable in terms of his injury record. And so it helps him as well. Alex Telles at left back, just because Luke Shaw, again, he has had injury problems in the sort of background to his season. He sometimes misses a couple of games here or there. Other times he actually has lengthy periods out. And his last injury was actually in the latter part of last season, after lockdown, where players had rested. And so because, I mean, that would always play on Solskjaer's mind, especially because Shaw this season has been one of the best left backs in the country. Arguably a top, you know, 5-10 left back in Europe this season. And so with him, it was understandable, because Telles is not a bad defender. You know, he's not a bad left back. He's a good left back. He's not, I wouldn't say he's excellent, but he's not average or above average. And so that was an understandable change. Wan-Bissaka at the right back with Harry Maguire at centre back. Those are just two sort of staple positions. In terms of our minutes this season, the four main players who have played the most minutes are Harry Maguire at centre back, Wan-Bissaka at right back, Bruno Fernandes at attacking midfield, and then Marcus Rashford, either whether he's on the left or the right or up front. The pivot, McTominay and Fred, sort of picked itself. Matic is not in favour at the moment. A lot of that is because he's lost form from last season, as well as the fact that my personal opinion is that he's being slowly shown the door, along with Juan Mata and a few others. I'm not 100% sure in that, but that's what I suspect. And then Pogba's injured, and so McTominay and Fred had to be the pivot. Front three was interesting, because before the game, Martial and Scott McTominay both picked up knocks, and we weren't sure whether they were going to play. McTominay ended up making it. I think he had to fight through, and during the game, we saw him on the floor twice, or three times, you know, with, you know, little knocks to his ankles, and so that was understandable. That's something he actually had before the game, whereas Martial was obviously able to come off of the bench because there were more opportunities for other players. Dan James starting is understandable. I jokingly said that, if you remember in the preview, where I said he could start, but he ended up starting. And it is because, you know, he is extremely physical in terms of his pace, his stamina, the fact that he is a role player who obeys, you know, he will do the dirty work in that regard. And so him starting wasn't a surprise. Mason Greenwood again, and Rashford would be the other two, because Cavani was injured, as well as Donny van de Beek. Now, the thing that surprised me was that Rashford was on the left wing. And I think that Zaldúa sort of influenced that. I don't know if Zaldúa was chosen to play the right back over Gorosabal, like whether that was decided before the game or whether it was a few days before the game. But in any case, I don't think we expected that. And so with Zaldúa play, I mean, we could have had an idea that that was going to be the case. But I think once it was confirmed, then that was okay. When actually you can play on the left-hand side, because he's not going to be attacking in the same way. Dan James on the right, and Mason Greenwood obviously wants to be a centre-forward. So, yeah, and then obviously Bruno Fernandes, who essentially plays as a centre-forward, which is, you know, why I often say that the way we play is in a 4-4-2. It's not necessarily a 4-2-3-1, even though that's what the traditional, you know, numbers say, or the traditional formation says.
Yes, and we will get to talk a bit more about that in the next few minutes. So the game starts, and the only thing I'm going to mention is that it was initially a kind of a strong start from La Real with some good transitions. Isak was particularly dangerous here. He forced it in the first minute. He forced like a Bailey turnover, set up Januzaj for a good shot. Then he also got another good shot when Januzaj passed into space. He zooms again past Bailey in the second minute, forces a good save from Henderson. And I would say that those are kind of the main times where Isak was able to get the best from Bailey. Afterwards, I would say that Bailey handled him pretty well. What do you think?
I mean, Eric Bailly is an interesting player, because he's physically very good, but because he can be quite aggressive, people have the, you know, you get this notion that if a player is aggressive, he's not reading things properly, you know, and he's just being too rash and he's not thinking and all these other, you know, caveats come with the narrative. And I think Sergio Ramos is the best example of a player who can be aggressive, but is an absolute stellar reader of football and, you know, movement and patterns. And so Bailly is very, very good at that. I believe, and I may be mistaken in this, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe when he left Villarreal to come to United, he actually had the best one-on-one percentage or one-on-one win rate or something with centre-backs in La Liga before he came to the Premier League. And so he always was able to read movement, be able to read what players wanted to do. And I thought he had a very good game after the shaky beginning. I thought he did very well just after that.
Mm-hmm. And then, so those first 5 minutes were kind of the best minutes probably for Real Sociedad in the game, because then that's when we get kind of what dominated that first half, which was Manchester United's pressing approach. I really like that it wasn't exactly like your typical kind of aggressive, like super aggressive press of like first forced turnovers from the center backs, but it was more kind of a pressing trap approach where United basically try to get Real Sociedad to pass it to the wings, pass it to the fullbacks, then fullbacks try to pass it to the wingers, and the attacks very much died there most of the time. So if you want, can you describe a bit more about United's pressing approach and what called your attention?
Sure. This might be a Premier League thing, because in the Premier League, teams tend to set a lot of traps to force teams to play to their fullbacks. Just with the notion that if you either press them, you're either going to play the ball backwards, or they're going to play the ball backwards, or they'll play the ball down the wing, and usually you can probably win the second ball from that, or even the first ball from that. Or they'll press it to you. Or if they get out of trouble, they'll still be on the sides where you can sort of still, you know, press them and maybe, you know, congest that area. And so I'm not sure if it's a European thing. It could be. But it's most certainly a Premier League thing that teams tend to do when they press. And a lot of that comes from Pochettino. Pochettino came into Southampton, something that he actually introduced into the Premier League. And this is, you know, going back 6, 7 years, 8 years ago. And then obviously went to Tottenham. He did the same thing there. And I would say he revolutionized that in the Premier League, because obviously Guardiola and the club weren't there at the time. And he did bring a lot of pressing principles, you know, from Bielsa and others into the Premier League. And I think that's something that we've learned recently. We still are deficient in that, but something that we did that was quite nice was we had our wingers tracking the fullbacks. We had our midfielders pushing up against your pivot, in terms of Merino and David Silva. And then Bruno Fernandes would do this thing where he would switch between the centre-back and Ilara Mendy. And so he would sort of gather in this sort of rough area. So it would prevent the goalkeeper from either playing it to one or the other, fearing that Bruno would get there. Because if he's just playing on the centre-back, it could have been an easy pass to Ilara Mendy and then maybe something else happens from there. But because Bruno was sort of gathering in that area, it, you know, as a goalkeeper, you think, okay, I don't want to take a risk with that. And, you know, Real Sociedad are a bit more of a safer team, a bit more conservative in certain situations. And so, you know, it sort of forced you know, the team to keep going to the wider areas. And then from then, we started to close them down. And that's when Telles pushed up and, you know, Rashford cut back. And I think from there, I think we did very well. I'll have to look at the numbers tomorrow, but I believe that's probably one. I mean, from the way it looked, it most certainly seemed like one of our better pressing performances this season.
And yeah, you already mentioned one of the things that I was going to point out, which is that, yes, Bruno up front had a very important role, like in shifting in such a way that even when Ilara Mendy tried to drop deeper to help his center backs play out of the back, yeah, it still didn't work. So all in all, United's pressing job was quite good. And it, most importantly, it prevented Merino and Silva from really having an impact on the game. Right. Apart from the Real Sociedad's forwards, the players with the fewest completed passes in that first half were Merino and Silva. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. So that's actually a really nice job in basically pressing them out of the game. So now the next thing we have to talk about is just is what happened once United recovered the ball, So the first thing we have to talk is, of course, the impact Rashford had playing on the left wing. Why was it valuable? In the end, Real Sociedad still attacked, even though it was Ubeldia playing, they still attacked more heavily on the right side. And that means that United got to do many of their best counterattacking chances on their left side where Rashford is. So all in all, what did you think of Rashford in today's game?
It's a strange one because overall he played well, but it's strange because he missed quite a few big chances at the beginning whilst also being important in the process to those chances. And so I've always said before, you know, a lot of United fans love to complain about Solskjaer and that he doesn't make substitutions at the right time. And I always say to them that, you know, as a manager, it's easy to make substitutions when you're losing. It's easy to make substitutions when you're winning. And it's easy to make substitutions when you're drawing, but what you know you're doing isn't working. And so those are the three situations it's easy to make subs in. The hardest situation to make a sub in is when you're drawing, what you're doing is working, but you're not executing it properly. And so, or you're not executing chances, because you wonder, well, if I change something, will those chances come about anymore? And sometimes it could be that particular player who's missing those chances. And you might think, okay, maybe I can remove them and put someone else there. But maybe that player is vital in the creation of those chances. And so that's one of the situations with Rashford. And he's often like that. And today we saw sort of the two sides, you know, and I sent out a tweet saying that Rashford can be frustrating at times because he will do incredible things. And then he'll do other things in between those incredible things that you'll just think, like, it's very erratic, you know, very rangy in that regard. But he had a fantastic game. And I think that, again, we exploited indirectly David Silva in some ways, in that because Real Sociedad, you know, they attacked down the right-hand side and we let them attack down the right hand. We let them have the ball. What happened was, you know, David Silva pushed up and it would force your team to move a bit more further forward than maybe you would have liked. And so when we transitioned, we passed it behind that pivot. You know, if think of the 1-2 pivot again in a 4-3-3 midfield, we would pass it ahead of that, you know, that pivot, that two of Merino and David Silva. And then from then, it was just Rashford running against either Ilar Mendy if he was there, and if he wasn't there, against the centre-backs. And there was a moment, I think it was Ilar Mendy, where he tried to tackle Rashford and Rashford sort of skipped past him on the halfway line. And it was very emphatic. It was either him or someone else, but that I think was our strength, that if we can play behind a team's midfield, then it's, you know, it's fair game, just because of the raw pace that we have. And that's something that Solskjaer actually uses Rashford for specifically, in that if he can get behind an opposing team's midfield, whether it's the pivot in the 1-2 midfield or the pivot in the 2-1 midfield, as long as he can get past that line, then, you know, he has a lot of fun running up against defenders. And I think that's something that, you know, we tried to play through, and then we just sort of hope that the execution would eventually occur.
Yeah, that's a perfect description of what was happening in the case of Rashford. Then the other thing I would like to cover. So what are your thoughts about Bruno in this game and kind of his role as what is essentially a striker? Like, is this different from the role Bruno usually has? And yeah, just talk about just how versatile this guy is, frankly.
It's slightly different, but within the same framework. So when he plays with Cavani or he plays with Martial, he tends to play very high up the pitch. And I remember producing a bunch of average position maps and people were shocked by how high he was. And the reason is because if you look at his average position, even today, it looks like he's the highest player in the center with Rashford on the left. But If you look at his average position and you include where he likes to roam around on the pitch, sometimes he might receive the ball in deeper positions, and so his average position looks deeper. But then when you actually look at where he's roaming, it's still very high, you know, and he makes many runs in behind the defense. He loves to, you know, that sort of direct way of playing. And it's sort of like a second striker. It reminds me a lot of Ferguson's Rooney-based 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2, in that it was Rooney playing deeper than the striker he was next to, whether that would be Luis Saha or whether it was Ronaldo in certain situations or Tevez in certain situations or even Van Persie in certain situations. But it would still be a 4-4-2. It would never be seen as a 4-2-3-1. And I think that we play a 4-4-2 in many ways with Bruno Fernandes, in that if he plays with Cavani, he tends to play quite higher anyway. If it's with Martial, he'll play quite higher. Greenwood today made it a bit easier for Bruno to play higher because Greenwood was actually dropping quite deep. And I don't know whether it was because he thought that was the right thing to do, because again, he's only 19, and sometimes you think in a big game, I need to be responsible, and the responsible thing is to be deeper. You know, that's what you know, the young players tend to think. If they think about being responsible, they think defend first, you know, make sure I follow my man. And they don't think about, no, sometimes responsibility could be just standing up against the centre backs and not moving, just so you can be a presence there, and so they can't do certain things. And with Greenwood, because he was dropping deeper, it ended up meaning that when the ball did go to Rashford or it did go to Tellez on the left hand side, the player that he would look up and see as the first, you know, the foremost player would be Bruno Fernandes. And because Greenwood was deeper, or he was on the right, or he was drifting, and I think that made it easier for Fernandes in terms of his versatility. I mean, he plays in such a strange way, in that, you know, he drifts around everywhere, but then he's very direct. You know, he loves to pass the ball forward and he gets annoyed if he can't do that. And so it makes it very easy for him to be slipped into different situations. And so with us, it's very useful because he can play deeper. He can play as a midfield, as a centre midfielder, which he's done before in a 4-3-3. And he does that with Portugal as well. When they play with Carvalho in holding midfield on the left-hand side, they might play Gomes or someone else. And they play Bruno Fernandes on the right-hand side. And sometimes they might play João Moutinho there as well. And so he's used to playing deeper. But then obviously he can play as an attacking midfielder if we need him to be, or he can play as a second striker, or he can play as a centre forward, which is what he practically did today. And so I think that that's quite useful, especially because he's got the skill set of a midfielder. So when he is up front, you know, quote unquote, it's sometimes difficult for centre backs to read him because he doesn't do the usual things a centre forward will do because he's not a centre forward. And I think that's the benefit. So today we noticed, you know, there were quite a few things that he was doing and he wasn't being picked up just because he just doesn't move like a normal center forward, even if he's in those areas. And I think that was quite useful for us.
Absolutely. And yes, and in the end, I highlight here Rashford and Bruno because, of course, at the goal at the 27th minute, that's kind of the main protagonist. Rashford drawing players to him on the left wing, then lobbing a pass all the way to Bruno. There's kind of a miscommunication with keeper Ramiro, who had a pretty good performance up to then, and his center backs, and that kind of leaves the ball for Bruno to just score against the empty goal. Now, after that goal, after Real Sociedad kind of stabilized things in the last 15 minutes of the first half, United also, I feel, retreated into kind of a deeper block, so stopped pressing so aggressively as they were doing in that first half hour. Other interesting tactical switches that we could see were that Oyarzabal and Jan Usai actually switch wings. So Oyarzabal was now on the right, Jan Usai was now on the left, which I, to a certain degree, I kind of found it weird because it made Real Sociedad's attack a bit more vertical. Like, in my opinion, you kind of wanted Silva and Jan Usai on one wing so that they could combine and keep the ball for a while, because one issue with Real Sociedad this game was that the attack, once they were in the opposition half, it's just basically run to the end line, try to make a cross, and that's it. Like, they never really moved it around horizontally. And in the end, how do I put it? Because the attacks went by so quickly, it also means that it was kind of easier for United to counterattack there, because they were, it's almost as if Real Sociedad, when they attacked, didn't give themselves enough time to, like, get in proper shape for like a static attack in the opposition half. So whenever they lost the ball, the team was still kind of disorganized. So
that's an interesting point as well, because usually United struggle with certain types of attacks, and a lot of them are ground-based attacks. If you think about the traditional Guardiola slip through ball, you know, that slip through ball to the runner that's going in between the fullback and the center back, and he pulls it back to another player or a cutback. And because there was a lack of that, it actually made it quite easier for Maguire and Bailly to sort of defend in that, if I'm not mistaken, I think they combined for about 13 clearances or something like this. And a lot of them were quite easy. You know, you wouldn't think that they combined for 13, but they did. And I think that's, you know, they won the majority of their duels as well. And I just think that the way, as you said, you know, the way that the Real Sociedad played, it did make it easier for us in that regard, defensively at least.
I definitely agree. And just to end kind of the analysis of the first half, I think basically the only one who generated a cutback that looked dangerous, for example, Isak running behind in those short spaces, which I think on the offense, he was kind of the best player for Real Sociedad. Just to end the first half analysis, I will just point out, so this one ended with 4 shots from Real Sociedad versus 5 shots from Manchester United. All 5 United shots were big chances.
That's incredible.
That's incredible. That is something that I don't think I had ever seen.
Just to put that in relativity, in the Premier League, United average around 2.5 big chances a game. to get 5 in the first half against a good defensive side, this just tells you how different it was.
Good God. That makes it even worse. So now, going into the second half, one thing that surprised me is no major tactical or personnel changes from Real Sociedad, which I kind of found a bit weird considering how badly they got outplayed in that first half hour. I presume from the coach's perspective, Alguacil kind of thought, well, we kind of stabilized things in the last 15 minutes. The second half will be better. So let's just keep doing what we're doing. yeah, it didn't go quite as expected. In the end, I would say that the first 10 minutes of the second half kind of saw a very similar script to the last 15 minutes of the first half. So it was the same. Like Real Sociedad had the ball, but they kept attacking at a high tempo. And just like you mentioned, like their approach to attacking was mostly doing those kinds of crosses into the box that were straightforward for Maguire and Bailey to clear out of the box. And in the end, United was still getting the counterattacks in. And that's kind of when everything really collapsed. So then we get in the 57th minute, United get another good transition opportunity. Rashford slips that through ball that neither Lenormand, neither Monreal can intercept. Dan James gets the ball. Bruno takes the shot to score. Very simple. All in all, do you have any words for Real Sociedad's attempts to hold the high line throughout this game?
Yeah, I thought that was probably the, if I was to, because it's easier to say that, you know, this was a tactical error and that was a tactical error. And a lot of it is not necessarily errors. They're more just decisions that could have been executed better. I think the actual error was, however, that the line was very high at times. And so what would happen was that when we would transition, because they were, you know, obviously they're going to be dropping back and we have a lot of pace on that counter. When someone's running with you with pace, you know, sometimes you can forget, you know, your positioning, spacing, the line, you know, who's going where, what's happening here, because you're looking at the ball, you're looking at the man, you're looking at the space, you're looking at how close you're getting to goal. You're making sure that, do I play offside? Do I not play offside? And are we keeping a good line here? Where's the left back? Where's the right back? And because of how fast we were and how chaotic it became, it made it quite easy for us to get through the midfield. I actually thought that Marina would drop deeper with El Aramendi and maybe make a 4-2-3-1 with Silva ahead centrally. And so they can pack the centre with Silva playing centrally with Marina and El Aramendi playing deeper and maybe just contain United for the time being and see if they can build slowly. But they didn't do that. They kept the high line, as you said. And from there, it became quite easy. I mean, Bruno did scuff the shot. I think he kicked it into the ground or he kicked it into his other foot or something. But and also, Dan James took a loose touch and it ended up being assist, which is a different conversation that we'll have regarding assist numbers. But again, yeah, I think that was probably the tactical error, if any. Or maybe the tactical deficiency is probably a better word to use, in that the line was very, very high. And I think that it was quite clear in the first half that it wasn't working out of variance. It just wasn't working out of quality. That it was a quality issue that as to why it wasn't working. It wasn't just like, you know, it just so happens that we were beating that high line, because with a bit more detailed scouting, perhaps, you know, it would be noticed that United have done that under Oli for 2 years, almost in this first season we've been doing that. And I think that could have been probably better planned, or, you know, it could have been better negotiated in the second half.
And then after that second goal, of course, 63rd minute, we get another one out of same mechanics. So really nice Fred pass into space. Rashford once again bullies Suveldia, who finished towards the far post. At that point, of course, the game, there's not much more to talk about the game because it was at that point, your opponent is basically dead mentally. Yeah. There were a few kind of rotation substitutions for Ole in Manchester United. At the 60th minute, we have Matic coming in for McTominay. 69th minute, we get Martial in and Rashford out. So how do you feel? Like, you rotated a lot in this game and things went pretty well, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think that's probably something that Ole would be very happy with, because we had injuries that forced us to rotate. So it wasn't necessarily a choice. And, you know, sometimes when you have to do things in a way that you don't want them to occur, you just wish that you get, you know, if I can get 80% the result I want, then I'll be good. But, you know, it was more than 100%. You know, if we had come away from this game with maybe a 0-0 draw or perhaps even a 1-0 win, we would be quite content with that. But, you know, a 4-0 victory is more than we bargained for. And being able to take Rashford off early, being able to take McTominay to save him, obviously, defensively, as well as because of his legs, you know, he did pick up a knock before the game. And then obviously Matic gets half an hour. And I think that's quite important. It's something that people don't consider when they think about role players in that regard. You know, they always have this thing of, well, why is so-and-so playing? Why are they coming off the bench? Why is this person not coming off the bench? And this person should be, you know, starting and they're not even getting a game off the bench. And it's like, well, that's not really how it works, because you have squad players and you have role players who have to be fit and ready, that are very happy to do that job, to come off the bench. They don't want to start, or they want to start, but they're happy being on the bench. Whereas it's difficult when you have a player that wants to start the game, because with those players, you can't just bring them off the bench and say, okay, that's, you know, you got your 30 minutes, be happy. They won't be happy with that. And the fact that we were able to bring Matic off the bench and play half an hour, Dan James started the game, of course, and you know, he ended up finishing the game. So that was really, really good. And then obviously Martial came on. He had a knock, but he still got a bit of a run out. Rashford got a rest. Bruno got a rest. Amad Diallo came on for his debut. And we saw his quality straight away, you know, when he skipped past one and then he, you know, against the double team. And so I think that, you know, it was not a perfect game, but, you know, it ticked many boxes, which I'm sure Ollie will be very happy with.
Yes, and that's really a really nice way to wrap up kind of this game analysis. The only thing I will add, of course, at the very end, Dan James gets a very well-deserved goal after having a really nice game, kind of a lob Bailly pass that he runs in behind Monreal, runs all the way basically almost from the halfway line all the way to the goal, gets, again, a pretty well-deserved goal. So,
and just before the end, I think the numbers said we created 8 big chances in the whole game. And that doesn't include Dan James's offside goal. So really, it was 9. You know, 9 big chances against Real Sociedad, which is unbelievable, honestly.
Yeah, that's like 3-4 times what United usually create in the Premier League, just to give the listener a bit of context. So with this, we kind of go into the takeaways. So the question I have for you as far as takeaways: why don't United press like this every week?
It's a very good question. One of the problems we have in pressing is that our players tend to, and this might come across the wrong way, I don't mean to say that our players are disobedient to the plan, but there are times that they do things that they shouldn't do and that they've been told not to do. So for example, Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, they have a habit of gambling. And so they will try to press a player and then go on the wrong side of that player and then give that player an open path to progress the ball. They do it a lot of the time. Bruno Fernandes actually did it a couple of times today as well, but you know, it wasn't necessarily noticed or nothing came about from it. And so we have this thing where our players do that. You know, they will gamble on the pass going backwards. And so they will run backwards and then the player on the ball doesn't pass backwards. He goes forwards and now they're out of position. And then all the other players have to now cover for that situation. Likewise, we have players who like to press individually. Bruno Fernandes does that again, you know, where he likes to press individually just because he's got this mindset of pressing the ball. And so he will go by himself. Other players won't be ready for that. And then they'll think, do we go, do we not go? And then they'll go, but then the midfield's not ready for that. And then they will think, do we go? And then whilst you're thinking about whether or not to go or to go, the ball's already been played. And one of the example would be against Tottenham. We went 3-1 down against Tottenham. We had 10 men. After the restart occurred, in the second half, after, you know, we kicked off again, Bruno Fernandes was still pressing and he was telling Greenwood and Rashford to press with him, and then Matic went up with him, and we were pressing a team with 10 men and they had 11 and we were already down 3-1, and then we just got beat on the counter basically. And we've got that problem, you know, where we don't press effectively. Is it selfish? It could be perceived as that. I mean, I don't want to necessarily accuse the players myself because I don't work with them. But it's most certainly deficient. It's most certainly immature or irresponsible in the way that we press at times. And I think that today we were much better because players stuck to the plan. And when we drew against Manchester City 0-0 in the Premier League, we pressed them very well in that game as well. And we do have these games where all the players seem to follow the plan. The press goes very, very well. And when we're not pressing well, it's because you find players doing things independently or individually that they shouldn't be doing and that they are told not to do, and they consistently still do. But you can't just say, we're going to drop you now because they're the best player in that position. And so it's a very difficult situation that Ollie is in at the moment in terms of pressing, because he wants to do it, but he knows that there are risks with that. And I just hope that it gets better. And that's the only thing I can hope for. And yeah, so we'll see how it goes for the rest of the season.
Yes. And then on my side, so takeaways for Real Sociedad. Honestly, a game like this is always a bit hard to analyze because, like when you get outplayed this completely, it's really hard. It's like, what can they do better? Everything. But
yeah, it's very easy to overanalyze everything.
Now, of course, one of the things that looked bad, I would say, kind of the thing of the high line and keeping the high line despite the fact that it was not working, despite the fact that the personnel clearly were struggling with it. And of course, the thing is that Real Sociedad keeps a high line like this in La Liga all the time. But here is where I guess we have to go into that final point of La Liga teams. And we'll have to see. We'll have to keep seeing what happens until the end of the season. We've seen this throughout the week in that Sevilla struggled a bit. Barcelona struggled against PSG. La Liga teams, at least this week, seem to have some struggles defending transition attacks of this speed. Of course, my brain is kind of wired to see trends, and I'd like to generalize this to the entirety of La Liga. But at the same time, this week, we had La Liga teams facing Mbappe, Haaland, and Rashford on the counter. Like, it might just be this was a bad week against some of the best players in the world on the counter. It happens. What do you think? So do you think it could be variance? Do you think it could be a trend?
It's a tough one because, you know, when we discuss how players in La Liga play, you know, and how those teams play, which is conservative, it's patient. I think I like that word. You know, it's definitely patient. It's probing. You know, it's testing for certain movements, certain patterns. It's seeing whether there's a weak link. And with all that chess, basically, another team just comes and plays checkers. And you can't really handle the fact that it's a different game. And I think that's something that has occurred. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, Barcelona is a good example because they don't necessarily have that pace. But then I think, well, even under the Guardiola team, they didn't have so much pace in certain situations, but they were still quite decent, you know, and they wouldn't get destroyed, you know, on the transition. But then again, it's very difficult again because it's Mbappe, it's Haaland, it's Rashford, and they're very fast players. And I think we'll know more by the end of the season. It'll be interesting to know whether teams in La Liga themselves struggle with fast transitions, you know, with certain players in La Liga that are playing in La Liga for certain teams, and whether it's actually a thing that those players tend to succeed, or maybe they are better in certain metrics. You know, they carry the ball better. They carry successes better, for example, in transitions, because, you know, that is who they're facing. And so that'll be quite interesting. With more data, we'll know. But it's definitely, as James York would say, it's a flag. You know, it's something that you would flag up. You would hold it there. You'd go, okay, I would need to look at that later. But that thing over there is very interesting.
Yes. And I think on that note, we're good to end. So, man, United Arena, thanks so much for being here, man. Thanks so much for commenting on this. Honestly, you are a treasure trove of knowledge. And what I love about talking to you is that for you, like you at this point are really good at spotting like the fundamentals of a player and breaking down United players into their fundamentals. And it just makes for some really nice analysis. So we're really glad that we had you here to analyze this.
I'm more appreciative that you guys were, you know, that you allowed me to come on. And, you know, I followed quite a few of you. You know, I love La Liga football, and it was more of a thing where when you asked me to do this, I was sort of, you know, giddy, you know, without showing it. It was more like, oh yeah, sure. But in my head, I was like, yes, finally, I get to speak to these guys. And so, yeah, I'm most certainly appreciative.
And we're very happy to speak to you. So to everyone listening, thanks for listening to us. As usual, thanks for following the Between the Posts podcast. Of course, if you don't follow us on Twitter, go ahead, follow us at Between the Posts. If you have any questions, always feel free to direct them to me on Twitter or to Eric. As usual, we'll link to our Twitter profiles on the podcast description. And of course, remember to follow United Arena. Remember to subscribe to his Patreon. So, and remember also to leave us reviews wherever you listen to this podcast, be it on Spotify, on iTunes, wherever it is. So thanks for listening. Again, United Arena, thanks for being with us.
Peace.